Up from the bottom.
What?
Oh. Hi!
Hello, listeners.
My name is Cody.
And my name is Lara.
And we are at Camp Improv Utopia West 2018.
And we're here to tell you all about the things that you wish you knew but don't already know.
And today, we are speaking with resident laughologist Sandra McFarland Daniels McPayne.
That's me, yes. Hello, hello, yeah. Hello.
And she is here to tell us about, she has a new book out about the difference between, what was it, a chortle?
The difference between a chortle and a guffaw.
Okay.
Yeah, this is something that hasn't actually yet been extensively studied. I am the first person to actually go through the process of categorizing laughs. And I don't like to toot my own horn, but I'm quite proud of my work.
What kind of laugh was that?
Oh, that.
Yes.
Oh, well, what do you think?
It didn't seem like a guffaw because, I read your first chapter and it seemed about the, you know, outlining a guffaw.
Mm-hmm,
and it
mm-hmm.
seemed that the guffaw was a more of a deeper ha. Or, and some people had a
That's correct.
Multiple.
I see you read carefully into my first chapter. Yes, that was actually a, it wasn't a giggle. We'll get to that later.
Of
course.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a snicker.
Of course.
That's, again, for the later chapters.
Okay.
I wouldn't do a snicker in front of novices.
Expect them to understand.
Right. There are nuances to every type of laugh, and that's something that people do not understand in this society.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'll just read from the card then.
Okay,
go
for it.
I don't want to waste too much of your time.
Oh, no, please. I love doing interviews.
Okay, so your first question that I have is, what are the defining three features of a chortle?
The chortle is quite a musical laugh.
Okay.
It is not one long sustained note. It's several notes. That fluctuate. There's an up and down movement in the notes. I could demonstrate, but it is quite difficult to pin down without an actual situation propelling such a laugh. It cannot be done inorganically, if you see what I mean.
Do you have? I didn't read too far into the book, I must confess, about the chortling. I read mostly about the guffaws.
I understand. You're a busy man.
Yes, I didn't know we were going to get this interview. It just happened suddenly.
Well, you know, it's good to be prepared, but you can't always have that, so.
Yes. So what type of scenario or situation would get you into feeling the natural chortle.
The chortle environment?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, well,
is that the proper term?
Yes. It would involve malt liquor, generally speaking, in a small glass.
Oh, my.
And a chessboard, most likely. And one does not chortle with low status people. I would probably be hanging out with royalty, maybe presidential members.
So a chortle is something to be conducted among peers. Of a higher status.
Yes, well, they'd only be considered peers if you yourself are of high status.
Oh.
A pauper cannot chortle. That would be madness.
Was that a minor chortle?
Oh, that you noticed that, did
yes.
you?
Yeah. Yes,
oh,
I did.
That was a bit of a scoff, I'll admit. Sometimes I scoff.
That's
yes.
true. Yeah, the scoff is it's in the subsection between the chortle and guffaw.
That is correct. You have to earn the right to scoff. Not any old person could just scoff.
It's yes.
Years of experience, years of you know, practicing one's decorum, one's poise. Only then can one really truly scoff.
It's my understanding, into some of the other the limited research in the field that you haven't conducted yourself.
Right, I've done most of it.
Just
to make that clear to our listeners, I am the foremost scholar in the subject.
to anyone who would think otherwise.
Sorry, that was one of mine. That is a trademarked laugh that I just heard
there.
I
Did I do it right?
Well,
I'm sorry.
That's not the problem. The problem is you are going to have to pay me royalties for that one.
I don't think I'm going to make any money off of this podcast. Laura and I, we just started this podcast. We don't have any.
We'll discuss it afterwards. Sorry I brought it up. Edit that part out.
Yeah. And by the way, it's my fault, not Laura's fault. If you talk to her, she told me not to do any laughs.
I hear she's very rational. So.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carry on. Sorry about that. Yeah, but don't do it again.
Okay, I won't.
Okay.
Okay. So the scoff.
Yes.
My father used to scoff.
Oh.
How
much did your father make per year?
Probably like $28,000 a year. Mm. Yeah.
Scoffing and out of one's range, I see.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not to bring shame upon your family, but I do think this is a faux pas.
Yeah. To be fair. Anytime he would scoff, it was often followed by intense self-shame and apology.
Well that makes up for it.
Claiming for example, I do not care, I don't even care, it's totally fine, it doesn't even matter to me.
Well, that's the only way to undo a misplaced scoff. Yeah. Who did he scoff at, if I may ask? To which people did he direct this?
The people were less consistent than topics.
Okay.
Like, topics of discussion... Such as
genocide, perhaps.
No.
Good.
Genocide. He would make jokes about.
Oh,
and
yes.
His laughter was very. I don't know if laughters are often described as idiosyncratic, or if they're only more regimented in description.
Well, it depends. Some people are laughter rogues. So
laughter rogues.
Yes, that's right. Unconventional laughers, if I might say so myself. It's actually a very small percentage of the population, and we haven't had a lot of time to study that specific part of the population yet. It's low priority.
Okay.
Really, right now we're focusing on the guffaw, and we've done
and
some work on the giggle.
Okay.
The chortle.
It seems like you've done a lot of research on I don't know if I should call them negative. You call them high status. Some people might call them negative or down looking or looking down, patronizing, if you will, condescending even.
I take offense to that.
I don't see it that way, but I'm just trying to represent the minority of viewers who can't afford to run a podcast.
Let me put it this way for those so-called viewers.
Mm-hmm.
One laughs the way one is born to laugh, and one studies the laughs that one is born to study.
Mm.
And if you look at the climate today, the laughter climate, you'll see that I'm merely projecting what is already out there in the world.
So you're saying that despite the strong, matter-of-fact tone of your recent book.
Yes, yeah.
Laughing for serious.
Mm-hmm.
You actually believe that that it's a more subjective thing.
Well, here's the thing. Emotions are a funny thing.
Mm.
Oftentimes one is programmed to laugh in such a way from birth.
Mm.
It's more of a nature than a nurture sort of a concept.
Okay.
And therefore, you know, other factors coming into what might be causing that laugh will not be quite as strong as the laugh that already resides within a body.
Mm.
If you understand my meaning here. It's
so,
it's a very high concept. It's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that brings me to, I know we're not here to talk about your forward research, and we're mainly discussing Laughing for Serious.
Right, right.
Which, by the way, I recommend to all my listeners.
Having only read the first chapter, but fine.
I read the first three chapters.
Did you read the synopsis as well?
I read the synopsis, of course.
That's
I read the first three chapters, I read the synopsis, and I did read, I read the bookend. The extended bookend, because thank you so much. You sent me the...
Anytime, yes, you're welcome. Yes.
I read the extended bookend on the giggle.
Did you read the conclusion, though? Because I spent a lot of time on that.
I'm
actually most proud of the conclusion.
I read chapter 12, Conclusions of Laughter, and also the preceding chapter up to you... Up to your neck.
In laughter.
In laughter. Yes.
That's the one.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Yeah.
Because that's when you mention the giggle and the higher laughs.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it is, it's all about anatomy. Excuse me. Sorry about that. My tongue got tied. It happens sometimes when one practices laughing a lot on a daily basis.
Do you use inspiration for your laughs?
Oh yes. Oh yes. I watch the news.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I watch presidential debates, and oftentimes I'll study those laughs, and then I'll pause it and I'll practice it myself, and I'll then type up the characteristics that I've heard, run that through my program, and you know, there's a lot of graphs involved. Mm. It's a long process.
Mm-hmm. So we've covered a lot of minor areas, but I'll jump back to a big question I had about the guffaw.
All right.
Speaking of celebrities and speaking of presidential debates, especially in the last, I would say, you know, since the 2008 election and the election since then,
so many good laughs in that one.
Yes, many had by the audience and the debaters.
The candidates. That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the finest in history, actually, if I may say so. And I've seen them all. All the ones in recorded history, that is. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm, yes, yeah.
Okay, so I was going to ask about recent ones, but before we get into that, so I don't forget, I would like to ask, how did you feel about the laughter in the Kennedy-Nixon debate?
Oh, Kennedy, he has got a laugh. Yeah, you know, there was a lot of D minor that I detected in that one, which is unusual for a man of his height.
That's a chord.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Three separate notes and a laugh.
Yes, generally men under 5 foot tend to laugh in an F sharp. Then there's a range right above that. Sorry, it's 5 foot to 5 foot ten. Mm. That tends to be a D.
Uh-huh.
A solid D. Uh-huh. And then after that we have the harmonics, and it gets really complicated after that.
Wow. So he was a very... I didn't realize he was over 5'10". I always heard he was short.
Well, you know, you had to be there.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm older than I look.
Oh, well, I would only assume. I you know, I would never have guessed under over 40.
Oh, well, I'm 42.
Oh. Mm. Yes, that was... you must have remembered when... your parents told you about Kennedy, then.
Oh yes, well, yes. Actually, my parents are dead. It's a sore topic. Could we get back to the? Sorry,
I'm sorry. Yes.
I don't so deal reason, well with emotions. No. Clearly, that's why I'm an academic.
Yeah, and that's why you have become such the foremost expert on laughology.
Well, I lose myself in my work. What can I say?
I want to say I really respect that about you.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've really done a lot for us. Those of us who don't understand.
I appreciate that. I think some people don't understand the severity of what I'm studying here. People think it's a lighthearted, you know, due to the nature of the laugh, of course.
Yeah.
People are going to assume that this is a mere pastime, that it's not important, that the stakes are low. But actually, laughter, it's tied to the fate of the planet, if I may say so myself, for obvious reasons.
Wow, that is very heavy and very tense, which laughter, as you mentioned, although as has been commonly understood, laughter is used to reduce tension or break it.
It can also add tension, though, as you would have learned had you read chapter 14, but I'll drop it, it's fine.
Chapter 12 was the conclusion.
Well, there was an epilogue, and it was 2 chapters long.
Oh, no, that was the extended bookend.
Did you not receive that one? I sent you that one, too.
I read it.
Oh.
I read that.
Well, you should know what I'm talking about.
Sorry, I have a parched throat. So let's get back to the recent presidential elections. Okay. So, Obama had a very light... Most of our candidates for a long time have had a heavy... you know, even Clinton was very charismatic, or Bill Clinton, of course.
Yes, yes,
not,
of course.
Not Hillary, yeah,
no.
She was not charismatic. Bill Clinton had a charismatic but heavy laugh.
Well, you know, I'm not sure you realize this, but you're actually hitting on the topic of my next book. Did you know that the way a candidate laughs actually affects whether or not they are likely to be elected? There's a lot of statistics involved, but I would characterize Obama as rather jovial in his laughing, and yes. I do believe that that is one of the reasons that he was elected not once, but twice.
Wow. Mm. And would you say that that's the same reason that President Trump was elected?
Well, he's a scoffer, and those are always a wild card. Ooh. It's hard to say. We didn't see that one coming. It pains me to admit. I'm generally very good at predictions, but that one, it just came out of the blue.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, came out of the blue and the red.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of colors involved.
Yes, yes.
I haven't really gotten into the field of adding, you know, laugh and color together, it's a little further than we're able to do with the technology at this point.
Yes. Yeah. Well, getting back to the recent presidential candidates. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we've discussed a little bit of Trump and Obama.
That's right.
George Bush Jr.
Mm.
His laugh was more of a snicker.
It was a bit of a snicker, yes. I would put that firmly right in the center of the snicker category.
Yes, and there wasn't much about the snicker in your book.
No.
But it's my understanding, it is a false high status. Correct?
Some people practice the snicker when in fact they haven't really earned the right to use the snicker, so hence the falsity of it all. It's a bit of a pretense. Mm.
So would you say that the snicker then is sometimes a positive or a...
That's an interesting question.
A high status? Because I associate the snicker with cartoon villain dogs and George Walker Bush.
Interesting. Well, cartoon characters have been known to snicker. I don't know about canines specifically. That's, again, something I haven't had the time to study. I would say that it is more versatile than people are aware of. I confess, in my youth, I did falsely snicker once or twice with the wrong intentions. And, the folly of youth when you're young... It's hard to know the rules around these things.
So, I have a question, because you mentioned that it's the wrong intentions. Mm. And, by the way, we've all snickered in our youth. I believe it's... When you're 14, it's practically encoded in your hormones.
It's embarrassing to admit, but you're right.
Yes. I don't blame you for being human. You are already exceptional.
We all have our faults. Oh, yes. Thank you.
I lost my question.
Well, get your note card then.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll go back to the notes. We've only done the first card, and we have 13.
You were going to bring up the adolescent. We have the stages of life.
Yes.
There's the childhood giggle.
Yes.
The teenage scoff.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. So we've been categorizing those very thoroughly lately, and but the thing that has us stumped is the elderly. There's a bit of a phlegmy sort of a laugh that goes on. There's a lot of it's somewhere between a cough and a chortle, I would say. But we haven't come up with quite the right descriptor, the right adjective.
Say a cough or a scoff?
Well, I was saying cough, but at that point, I feel most of the malice of the persona tends to have left the body by that point. So scoff is a bit harsh.
That's true. So, what age do you define elderly?
I would say above 90.
90? Wow, so 90 plus.
It used to be 80, but we've raised it.
Most aged, is that the common clinical term?
Well, depending on the country you're from, of course, different life expectancies are, there are various factors.
Oh, okay, so in another country they would be...
Well, in Japan, those people would be considered teenage.
Yes. That does make sense.
It's
all about the mean age.
That's right.
There are so many elderly in Japan compared to you.
Well, their diet is high in fish, so it seems obvious.
And high in rice.
They
take very very good care of their elderly.
That's correct.
So do you? Here's a question: do you think that a person's laugh, while being heavily genetic and heavily...
That's right. More nature than nurture, as I said.
Yes. How many... Do you think that a person can have multiple natural laughs?
Well, I'm no psychologist, but you may have heard of multiple personality disorder. Yes. Those people...
Dissociative identity disorder.
That's correct. That's exactly what I was looking for, yes. Mm-hmm. Those people, of course, it goes without saying, will have multiple laughs, each one in accordance with the personality they are displaying at the time. And that's situational, of course. It depends on where they are, who they're with, which personality will come out, and therefore which laugh will come out hand-in-hand with that personality.
Yes.
But in the average person who does not suffer from such mental impairments, it's rare. It's rare, but it does happen, and that's a genetic mutation. We haven't gone into that too much, but there is funding. There is funding for that in the future. I'll tell you that much.
I'm not trying to make you expound your whole future plan, as you've already indulged me so much. So I want to come back to, we started with the guffaw, and we've taken quite a roller coaster, which,
it's been emotional.
If I may touch your elbow, you have been extremely charitable with your time.
I have sensitive elbows, but I'll allow it just this once.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. Just don't do it again.
Okay.
Okay.
So your book did focus primarily on the guffaw and the chortle.
Yeah.
We've touched on the guffaw, but I would like to get a little bit deeper into the science of the guffaw. Many of our listeners are practicing med students who deal with laughter as a form of either oppression or therapy.
Right.
So people being laughed at into a natural
state.
Psycho state. And also people, on the flip side, this is something that one of the reasons why I love studying laughter so much is because it's so versatile. It's also being used, you know, they say laughter is the best medicine.
They do say I've heard that.
Yes, but, you know, I always thought, you know, again, as someone I don't really understand laughter naturally, I don't understand when it happens to me and why. But the research seems to show, most of which you have done, that almost every single person who laughs in a safe, controlled environment experiences increased healing.
That's correct.
Psychological trauma.
It's the endorphins.
Oh,
that's Oh, no, go ahead, please.
My understanding is that the endorphins are also connected to the, they call them the inner laugh track. You know,
that's
an inner monologue.
That is, that actually resides in the frontal lobe.
So the laugh track does occur in a specific place in the
brain. Oh, yes, we've done extensive MRI tests, there's one test that I actually am quite proud of this. I designed it myself. We had volunteers, and we put them in the MRI machines, and then we tickled them with feathers, and we took a series of photographs to see where the laughter was sparking neurons. And the frontal lobe is what we found.
Wow.
So that's how we know that. Yeah, it took many months to develop this test, and like I said, it's one of my finer pieces.
I remember reading it, and it was 2012.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was the first time you were published.
It was. Yes. Fond memories.
It's so funny in 6 years how the entire laughology community can just be flipped on its head by someone who it took you 2 years, three years to get published, correct?
Yes. Well, it was a difficult process, but once I got there, things just started rolling out too.
Yeah.
It was. You know, sometimes it takes a long time to achieve your goal, but once you're there, it's almost too easy.
Yes. Wow. That's really inspiring.
No, thank you.
So as most of our guests are our students, do you have any advice for, in a field that seems to be burgeoning with the way that you have given it so much life and so much...
Thank you. Thank you for that.
...density.
Kind words.
I'm just speaking the truth,
as
you often do.
Thank you.
Many of them write to me asking for advice on how to, what to focus on in order to most impact the field. Where should their eyes be, or where should their ears be when it comes to the next
innovation?
Laughing for serious.
Right. Well, I don't want to give anything away, but I would say that our listeners, these medical students that you referred to, they should focus on cadavers.
Cadavers?
Because only through human dissection can the true source of laughter be discovered. And that's all I'll say about that. I wouldn't want to, so many discoveries are yet to be made. And, I'm sure one of these hopeful young students, yes. They very well might be one of those contributors to the field.
Yeah.
That's the only clue I can really leave. To be honest, it's all so new. You know, the cadaver research is cropping up.
Yeah, the cadaver research actually was redacted from the final published article in 2012 because it was so controversial.
There was a hiccup. Yes. Well, it's important to make sure that these cadavers are legally procured.
Oh.
Yes, there has been some grave robbery, and I was not involved in that. Contrary to the allegations, let me just say that I had no part in that.
Can we say, this is for Lafo G221, who is a common, I wouldn't want to call him a troll, but he's a commonly opinionated follower on my Twitter account.
Go on.
He claims, and he constantly posts links suggesting that you are implicated in this. And I don't mean to discuss controversy, but I just heard you outright claim no involvement. And I would love to be able to put it to rest and be able to know that you claimed outright lack of involvement.
I am not legally... legally, I cannot comment at this time.
Okay. The suit is still in progress?
It's still in progress.
So it's not part of an agreement?
Well... Someone agreed. Wasn't me, I'll tell you that much.
Okay, well, we'll be pausing that now.
Yeah.
Welcome back! Yeah.
Hi,
sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, we had technical difficulties.
Right, of course.
There was about 45 minutes of conversation that was just missed from because my phone turned off. And,
you should invest in a soundboard, I'll tell you that much.
I need to have more than 3 listeners, and eventually I'll be able to have Patreon and just be able to get some sort of donations or something.
Well, I'm sure I will bring in a large audience.
Absolutely.
All my followers.
Yeah, I believe we already have over 15,000 listeners.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 15.
No.
15,000, well, that's nothing. You're welcome. You're welcome.
And I'm just really grateful that I bumped into you in that cafe right outside.
Yes, it was convenient that you were hanging around there with your clipboard, but...
Yes.
Yes,
yeah,
very convenient.
I was very absent-minded. I really have to tell you, I know we're getting close to the end of the episode, but I just wanted to say thank you for all the work that you've done to inspire all of us.
Thank you. I you were going to compliment me more, I assume.
Yes. Thank you for giving people who don't understand laughter a way to approach the world of humor the way that, online social groups have done for... isolated members of the autistic spectrum who often are unable to connect because the peers are out there for them and people who are supportive are out there for them, you know, and it's the same with A-laughers, you know, A-nomia, you don't understand, you can't remember names, A-laphia is
someone a serious condition.
Laugh.
Yes. It's sad, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it is possible for them to have a normal life,
yes.
As we've discovered.
And I want to say right now, I would never claim, and I'm sure that Dr. McPain would never claim that an autistic person or a person with autism or a person with alaphia would ever not be a normal person.
No,
we're, normal is absolutely not the word that
we're
trying to use.
Well, what is normal?
Use.
That's
it's beside the point. Yes, it's but you have given people who don't understand laughter a way to you've inspired a whole community of people to come together and find resources and find common placement and get funding for studies that provide protocol medication, which if I have you on next time, hopefully we can talk about a chuckle zone.
Well, you'll have to talk to my secretary about that one.
Oh,
but,
of course. I'm sorry.
I'm a very busy woman.
Yes, I'm feeling...
My book tour is coming up, as you see. So
I will be there when you are in Los Angeles.
That's right. Though I will have expected you to read both epilogues by that point.
Of course.
Yeah. Can I just say, before we finish...
a final word from Dr. McPain herself.
Yes, well, you brought up, the A-laughter community, the autistic people who are unable to laugh, and this is serious work that I'm doing, and if there was just one point that I could drive home today, it's that laughter is not funny. There are too many people out there treat it like a joke, and it's not... It's serious work, and I've put my entire life into this, my entire career, and I want people to know that. I want people to understand laughter is not funny.
And that's why you wrote Laughing for Serious.
That's correct.
Thank you so much, Dr. McPain.
Thank you for having me.
That was...